This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome to episode 218 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. I hope everyone's having a nice ass day today. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness so you don't have to. And Wayne, what are we doing today?
Top 10!
Big episode.
Sorry, jumped in a little early.
It's not like we had 217 episodes before this this particular bit. Right, that's right. Top 10, last 10, where Wayne and I are going to rank, 10 of the last films that we've seen and not spoken about on the show from worst to best. And they're not linked in any other way, although mine are linked in one other way.
Yes.
This particular
week. What was the theme?
I'm in the middle of a movie-watching challenge, which will pick up a date on that in just a minute, which I haven't even told Wayne about yet.
Okay.
And as a result of that, I decided to work my way through the IMDb top 250 films from all around the world. I didn't limit it to the English language. I went, if we're going to go in, let's go in deep.
International films as well.
That is everything. Correct. So I've got 10 of those films, which I've never spoken about on the show before. That's my top 10 last 10 today, from the worst, and boy, oh boy, there's some worst.
Yeah, I got some worst myself.
Which there shouldn't be, given this is supposed to be the IMDb top 2.
I know. You technically should be like, well,
all these are films are great. Yeah, right. I've got news for you.
Very interesting.
All the way through to the absolute best, which I've got 3, 4, maybe even 5 films, which are pretty stellar.
Well, Paul, having this huge range of films to choose from, will have a very curated list. I am telling you the exact last 10 movies I saw, because I just can't do what Paul does. So,
correct.
There you are.
All right, well, that is today's show. Before we go any further, a couple of bits of housekeeping.
Sure.
First of all, this episode might sound probably not different at all, because we end up having to rush off and buy a new microphone when Wayne's mic just shut itself.
Straight up died.
And died. So with huge thanks to our patrons who are patrons of the show through patreon.com, we were able to go just charge straight off, buy a new microphone and replace it. And
scramble back here.
Yeah, spend an hour trying to find the actual new microphones that we wanted and couldn't find them anywhere in WA.
Because fuck it.
Because it's Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday.
And everything's shut. Do you live in a world, part of the world, listeners, where your shops are open all the time? Well, we don't.
Yes, you should be very happy about that.
Yeah, exactly. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Or
some shit's open, but not everything, and that's fucked.
Yeah. So anyway, we managed to track down a replacement mic, but we will be upgrading the equipment in the near future on the show, so hopefully you'll hear a difference in sound quality.
Yeah.
For the better.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's that part. Second of all, with big thanks to Apple Podcasts /Apple. You may have noticed a change to the way that we are naming these episodes. The episode 218 no longer precurses the title of this week's episode, Top 10, Last 10. Last week, episode 217 did not have that in the title. It was just the best and worst of Game of Thrones.
Is that because?
It's because Apple, in their infinite wisdom, have decided to automatically generate a number to go on the front of your episodes in the Apple Podcast app. Now, most of you listen to us through the Apple Podcast app.
Mm-hmm.
About 60% of our listens come through that.
Right.
As a result, we've had to reluctantly change the way that we title the episodes. But I do want a little shout out here to Apple, because we know they listen.
Sure they do.
If you're going to give automatic numbers to a podcast, how about you get the fucking automatic number?
Is that what they did?
Right.
They put the wrong number on our episodes.
2 weeks ago, we released the, whatever it was, top 10, not tearjerkers, I can't remember, Australian films.
Yeah.
And then we released Casino Royale sort of retro review.
Yep.
Why in the world of fuckery...
Yeah.
Would Apple think that the episode we released first would be 5:23 and then the episode we released afterwards would be 5:22?
So basically they fucked it.
They've completely fucked it. Whatever ridiculous way that their RSS feed is reading this is completely and utterly wrong. There is a workaround. Podbean allows you to work around it, and it requires going back through every single episode and renumbering it in one little bit of it and messed up. I went back about 50.
Fair enough.
And that's about all I can be asked doing.
Oh, well. Bloody Apple.
So that's why we'll still refer to it by number in terms of what we're recording and how we're talking about it. But it's a real annoyance. And if you listen to through any other mechanism, it might look odd. So we apologize for that.
There you go.
All right. That's the side of the admin, except, of course, for our plug.
You mean the one about the Podcast Republic app?
I do indeed. A robust.
And somewhat good ass. No, it's very good ass.
App for your Android devices. If you're an Android user and you want to know where you can listen to us, that is the way to go.
Hit that.
Excellent. Now, the movie watching challenge I mentioned, big news. Daniel from the IMDb Movie Journey podcast.
Sure.
And I had a discussion during the week. And we realized this is taking a bit of a toll on our lives.
No shit, fucker. Actually, no shit, because I can't even swing 10 movies. So what are you fuckers doing?
Now, the numbers to update, first of all, to see who is going to be Yeah.
Oh, dear. Go on.
Daniel currently sitting on 270. I'm currently sitting on 321.
What the fuck?
So we have kept a sort of, I think, exactly the same number difference from last time we reported. Now, Daniel suggested it's taking a bit of a toll. I kind of agreed.
No shit.
In terms of our physical sort of
as in having to activity, stay awake for this
yeah,
shit?
Yeah, having to stay awake and I'm sleeping less and all these kinds of things. And
I told you motherfuckers are crazy.
So we've agreed on this. Here is the new change to the movie watching challenge. It's first to 500. Because at current pace, I'm on track for somewhere in the order of 760 films for the year.
Okay, at this stage, you're just going for quantity, not quality. I guarantee you, you are not discerning at all about these titles.
Well, I'm watching the IMDb top 250.
So you've nailed it?
Daniel,
you
nailed the whole thing? I've got 12 left to go.
See, it's tough.
Daniel over there is busy watching fucking Tommy Boy. Friday the 13th films. You know, these films that are barely 90 minutes long and he's just hanging in there by the skin of his fingernails. That's not even a real thing, but you understand what I'm saying. So, there you go.
You're both fucking insane. At this stage, it's no longer about enjoying movies. It's just numbers, people.
Well, that's also what we discussed. I think our capacity to appreciate film is starting to suffer when you're watching five and six and sometimes seven films in a day.
Anyone can bang a million skanks, Paul. The question is, are you going to hold out for the good ones?
I can understand that from a guy who's watched 10 films other than the
that's
10
right.
we reviewed.
Although I'll tell you what, they're not all fucking good ones. <Yeah. they have. laughs>
All right, so there we are. So same for you listeners. If you're involved, and there's a couple of listeners, I think Blake Jarvis, Etienne, Philion, Xavier, maybe a couple of others are still in the running to hit 500 first. That's the new goal.
Okay.
And I'm anticipating that will happen end of August, start of September.
You're all crazy.
All right, there all we right. are. All right. That's all the preamble. Let's get into it then with this week's countdown, the top 10, last 10.
Insane in the memway.
Insane in his brain.
Insane in the memway.
Ball choke on my balls.
What? Top 10 last 10 films, where we rank the last 10 films we've seen, or at least pretty close to it, from worst to best, with an idea originally from the Cinebury list, James and Zach. Thank you to them. Now, Wayne, why don't you lead away, given your list is not any more linked than that, whereas I am IMDb top 250-ing it.
I should tell you that a couple of these are your recommendations to me.
Ooh, how low will they fall?
So, no, I think you'll be surprised, but yes, my number 10, everyone, is a movie that I heard was shit, so obviously I jumped right at it just to get me a 10 that I could start with, yeah. And I had no idea how bad it would be.
Because we will recommend, we will say when we cross the line yes. from being shit to recommend.
And most of mine are not recommends, just so you know, all right, including this one, Holmes and Watson.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, baby.
This piece of shit.
Dude, this is Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, but by the way, also Hugh Laurie, Steve Coogan, Ralph Fiennes, Billy Zane. There's actual stars in this movie.
Hang on. I'm not sure you can say Billy Zane.
Did they no longer
actual
a thing?
Stars in this movie?
Still
no.
Okay. No. Okay. All right. It's been a while since Dead Calm or whatever. Bitch, please. Okay. I filed this film under How the Hell Did It Get Made, okay? After that cast, even Steve Coogan has gone on record saying this film is a piece of shit.
Has he gone on record?
He has. He said, yeah, he did this. He made a joke about it, but it was straight up, this will still be rubbish when people look at it in 20 years' time. It's...
No, it's okay, Steve. No one's looking at it in 20
that's,
years'
that
time.
That was his, kind of his joke. Yeah, it was the whole thing. But yeah, it's a failure on every level, this movie. They're making Holmes and Watson try and be sort of a funny duo. And this was done once successfully years ago by Michael Caine and Ben Kingsley in a movie called Without a Clue. It was sort of a bumbling
was that, thing. Mid-80s?
Very, yeah, long, long time ago. And I actually liked that movie. This is not that. All they did with these two characters is made them idiots. They just make them dumb. It's like probably one of the worst comedies I've ever seen. And
agreed.
I mean, it just... And it's actually taking off the Guy Ritchie, Sherlock Holmes, a bit, but in a not effective way. So it just doesn't know what kind of movie it wants to be. And Holmes is sometimes brilliant, sometimes he's an idiot. At no time is he likable. Everyone shat on this movie so bad. They tried... The studio knew it was a piece of shit. They tried to sell it to Netflix. Netflix said no, and Netflix doesn't really say no.
Netflix said no. The streaming network that said yes to the Cloverfield paradox.
Exactly. Okay, so... And they looked at it and, wow, that is a turd. So when they released it here, it was just savaged, and reasonably so. Not only do you not watch this movie, you can happily boycott all these actors' careers. Well, at least Will Ferrell's.
This is the last time, I reckon, Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly are coming together.
Look, in Talladega Nights is a brilliant, funny movie.
Agreed.
I mean it. You know, yeah, right?
And lots of people love Step Brothers.
Yeah, I know.
I am not one of them.
I don't necessarily, but Talladega Nights is amazing. So these guys should work before. But it's just, they're doing really bad British accents. Like, it's just bad.
Everything's bad. I 100% agree.
There you are.
All right, well, from one piece of shit, which everyone recognises as a piece of shit, to another piece of shit, which, strangely, lots of people don't recognise as such. Apparently, if you made a film in the 50s from Sweden and your name was Ingmar Bergman, everyone wants to crap their pants at how good your film is. Yeah. Well, I have news for you. Wild Strawberries sucks all the ass.
Wild Strawberries.
Yeah. Here's the synopsis on Letterboxd.com. Crotchety retired doctor Isaac Borg travels from Stockholm to Lund, Sweden, with his pregnant and unhappy daughter-in-law, Marianne, in order to receive an honorary degree from his alma mater.
Okay.
Along the way, they encounter a series of hitchhikers, each of whom causes the elderly doctor to muse upon the pleasures and failures of his own life. These include the vivacious young Sarah, a dead ringer for the doctor's own first love. Now,
okay.
If that didn't bore you to tears, let me tell you, the film will.
Yeah.
Thank God it is not that long. It's only 91 minutes. That's its one saving grace.
Mm-hmm.
It stars a guy named Victor Sjostrom as the doctor. Max von Sydow is in it back in the day. And he's in The Seventh Seal as well, another Ingmar Bergman film.
How do you look back in the day?
It's hard to... You can totally see how he's become the man. But he's so young, it's off-putting for us as a contemporary audience. But look, that's not... By the way, this is so fucking boring. And his first love, by the way, was his cousin. So the whole way through this film, it's him reminiscing about how he didn't get to quite bang his cousin.
Oh, that's a bit fucking
it's so weird.
Yeah, you don't want that.
There's nothing wrong with it being black and white. That part's fine, but it is so boring.
Yeah, this
and
is on
no
the 250
one,
list.
Yeah, no what? One is likable. I don't understand.
You have no idea why
people
like it?
I just think people see that others have loved this movie and given it, 8.5 out of 10 or whatever, and they just go, well, I'm not able to explain why I don't like it. I'm not able to explain why you're wrong, so I'm just going to like it as well because I don't want to look like an idiot.
Wow.
And I'm just not
I've never
people.
Even heard of
I don't
film,
care.
By
it's
the
a
way.
Piece of shit. Okay. It's actively awful. I don't like Ingmar Bergman. I've now seen 3 of his films and they're all terrible. This is the worst and most egregiously bad of the 3 of them, though. Actually, no, Seventh Seal has some...
Is that shit?
Yeah, it has some merit. Artistic merit. I can see that one, understand why the critics love it. I cannot understand how anybody likes this film. It's balls.
Marketing man.
All right, that's my 10.
All right. My number 9 is a documentary about Jerry Seinfeld.
Oh.
Now, the movie is called... It's actually a movie documentary. It's called Comedian, and it focuses on 2 stand-up comedians. One is Jerry Seinfeld, and another one is a guy named Orny Adams, whose... Their careers are vastly different. Seinfeld is a veteran of the comedy trenches, and he's well-known, and Orny Adams is a rising star in the business, but he's nowhere near successful. And it's interesting because it is about comics life, and I personally am very interested in the whole LA, or whatever, comedy scene, how these people actually end up being professional joke tellers, the pain they have to go through, all this sort of stuff. Now, I should mention that back in the day when Seinfeld was on TV, we used to watch, but I was the biggest fan ever, and I used to actually be excited when an episode came on.
Yeah, for sure, you loved it.
And Paul...
Wayne would preface most sentences with,
What is the deal with your asshole in my face? No, it was... Stuff wasn't quite that bad, but Paul...
It was.
Well, okay, it was. Paul actually, to his credit, found something that I didn't. I was so in love with Seinfeld, I used to like his stand-up as well. Like in the beginning of the episode. I know. And Paul said, that is shit. And I said, really? I laugh at that. And then now, it's 20 years later, right? I look at it and I'm like, these are the same jokes he's doing and they're not funny. Seinfeld is no longer funny. Just for the record, that is my position. I know he still works.
Okay.
I don't care. He's not funny anymore. Anyway.
Yeah, I never thought he was the funniest comedian, but I thought his shtick, mainly because... He's such a bad actor.
He's a bad
worked,
actor.
And he was up against such good actors.
Well,
it worked really well for some odd and peculiar
exactly.
reason.
Exactly. No, Larry David was an amazing producer. That's how it was, right? That's what made that show good. Anyway, this film here is about just the agony that they go through as comedians, but it really does this weird thing. This movie is produced by Jerry Seinfeld, and it favors him and protects him very much.
Oh, there's a shock.
Yeah, I know. And as a result, the other guy, the Orny Adams guy, he is now reviled in comedy circles because it makes it look like he's a spoilt little prick, right? And even Joe Rogan's podcast and stuff has talked about this. They said, when that guy was signed up for it, they said, don't do it, man. You're there just to make Jerry Seinfeld look good. And it's like kind of an interesting... It is actually quite... It's an okay show, but it's so low rent. There's a lot of famous people in it here and there, but... It is not a good comedy because I don't like Jerry Seinfeld anymore. So it's not a good comedy documentary. Okay.
All right.
So,
I see how this
not
one falls
so
down.
Good.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. Another bad one. Look, of course, this is the way it works. Our top 10, last 10. The first half tends to be somewhere pretty shit and it gets better and better as we go.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're not all negative all the time. This is your first time checking out a show. That said, my number 9 is from 1979. It's a Russian film from another director whom is becoming synonymous for me with Shithouse. It's Andrei Tchaikovsky.
Okay.
It's a film called Stalker.
Stalker.
Now, on paper, this sounds pretty good.
Let's hear it.
It's about stalkers are these people that guide people into this kind of phantom zone after some kind of apocalyptic event, sort of dystopian type of future.
Okay.
And people can't get into this phantom zone because it's the laws of physics don't really apply and things are all strange as shit and the government blocks it all off. But at the center of this zone is a place called The Room. And the rumor is, if you can get to The Room, your most secret desire will be made manifest.
Sounds pretty good.
Interesting, right? Bit of a mindfuck of a film.
Sure.
It's 163 minutes long. Oh, and it's three dudes. The only notable thing it does is it's got this weird monochrome-y color palette while they're in the reality world. Mm. And when they cross into the zone, it comes normal.
Okay. Because right? in that time, you couldn't have this like mega color. Yeah.
So they get into the zone, and it's philosophical ramblings between these three people. One of them's a writer, one of them's a professor, and then there's the guide, and they all look exactly the fucking same. So it's hard to tell who's who, which does not help.
Oh,
either.
What? Sounds very Terrence Malick-y.
Yeah, I would be very surprised if Terrence Malick wasn't a big fan of this particular director. And it's so obtuse and like seemingly deliberately so.
Affected, yeah.
And then I read this interview with Tchaikovsky. So he was highly criticized for how slow the film was upon its release. Now it's a critical darling. It's in the IMDb top 250 and people again seem to love it. But he basically said, well, first of all, his defense was, well, we need to let people enough time to come into the cinema late.
Oh my God.
There's a good idea for making it from 163 minutes.
But there's a commercially like forward-looking director.
And then he said, actually, I don't give a shit what anyone thinks except Ingmar Bergman and another guy named Bresson, who was also known for his weird out there
films. I've heard of Bresson, yeah.
He said, that's who we made this film for. And I'm like, well, look,
an audience of two people, excellent.
Come on, man. If you
what studio would be happy with that as a brief?
And yet, everyone loves this movie.
Now?
I don't fucking get it.
I bet you it tanked when it came out.
So boring. It did tank when it came out, yeah. It's so boring. It's so obtuse. It's deliberately trying to be like, I'm smarter than you
Absolutely.
Are.
Anyone who touts a movie like that and goes, this is why it's amazing, and I want to just say the name.
And yet, on Letterboxd, it has a 4.4 out of 5 average rating.
It's amazing. Look, I mean, I've not seen it, obviously, so I don't know how it's good, bad, or whatever, but I imagine if you're bored, I am too.
Real reviews. I'm just being honest here. I could have pretended like it tickled my fancy. I wanted this to end from about 20 minutes in. I'm like, I'm done with this piece of shit.
I'm always intrigued when you get a movie like that, which is like, what the fuck? Everyone loves it. So what? Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Well, my number 8 is also a documentary, but I've actually been wanting to watch this because I'd heard about it. It's Leaving Neverland. This is the Michael Jackson.
Oh, Michael Jackson, yeah.
The Michael Jackson
one,
right?
It's 4 hours, this thing, isn't it?
It's fucking two parts, and I watched it was 4 hours, right? I almost wish I didn't watch this, though, because it's a documentary showing that at the height of his stardom, Michael Jackson began like a long-running relationship with two boys, aged 7 and 10, and their families, and this documentary is those kids now in their 30s telling the story of how they were sexually abused by Michael Jackson. Now, this interviews those kids, and they're now adults, obviously, and when I heard about it, I have to admit, I didn't want to believe it, because I loved Michael Jackson, just like the whole world did, right?
Whereas I find it, I don't know, I was straight down the line of, well, isn't it obvious by now?
But you're a shrink, like, I don't know, I think you're a shrink, I don't know.
I guess I look, I'm not as big a fan of Michael Jackson, I think he does some wonderful music, but he's always been a shady character to me.
Well, he's just, we had all put it down to he was just weird, because no one's like him, so he was supposed to be weird, and it was easy to believe that. Chris Rock called this years ago on the stage. He's like, another kid, Michael! That's like another white dead woman showing up at OJ's place. You know? So like, he was just saying that like, if there's another kid, there's something going on here. I'm done with him. So anyway, this whole show, the thing that I took away from it was, yes, I definitely think he did do what he did. The parents are kind of stupid of these kids, allowing them to like just, oh yeah, just sleep with that 30-year-old man or, you know, for a whole month. Once Michael Jackson asked one of the parents, can I have your son for a year?
What?
In America. And that kid was Aussie. It's like they're from Brisbane. And so...
Oh, well. I mean, no. Sorry, that was a joke. Definitely a joke.
Well, everyone, this was quite an eye-opener. He's an extremely good liar, Michael Jackson. Had an amazing PR team. And he did it so well. It's actually quite shocking and very disturbing.
What's wrong with it? It's at number 8.
The problem is it's too long.
Okay.
And it's just the same thing over and over. So what it does is... While you can take away good things from it, you don't need to spend 4 hours there. You need to spend 2 hours.
100% agree.
Yeah, so fair enough. Down the bottom of the list.
Okay, so what would you give it?
I would say it's about a 40.
40, so 2 stars.
It's 40, okay. Yeah.
I won't be rushing to watch this.
By the way, one of the dudes that was abused is a director working today. His name is Wade Robson, and he's actually well-known. He's done big movies.
Like?
Step Up 3.
Oh, God.
But, I mean, it's not like he has like a big, big movie, but this is a genuine working director. So he had a lot to lose by going to this, doing this.
You're mocking me, aren't you?
Step Up 3.
I'm saying these were actually considered big.
I think the problem here is, in everything you said, which I know, I haven't seen it, so I'm not challenging you at all, legitimate director and Step Up 3.
When I say, you have to see where I'm coming from. I thought this was a scared little boy, and then I find out he was a director, and he's the dance choreographer for NSYNC and all this stuff. That's what he did. So he actually succeeded in the industry after this, but it happened.
Okay. All right. That's 8 for you, 8 for me. Again, not another recommend off the IMDb Top 250, and yet this is another beloved film with an average rating on Letterboxd of 4.3 out of 5. It is directed by Billy Wilder, who's one of the most famous directors of all time from back in that era. I don't know if I'd ever seen one of his films. Now I've seen about 6, because that's how many of them are in the IMDb Top 250. It's The Apartment from 1960.
Oh, yeah.
Jack Lemmon?
Yep, exactly. I've seen this.
Hey. Shirley MacLaine?
Yeah.
Fred McMurray. So basically, and Ray Walston, the guy from My Favorite Martian.
Yes, and Fred McMurray was the, I know Fred McMurray.
He's in lots of those old series. In effect, it's a much better film than the two I've talked about so far. It actually has a narrative and it follows and it makes sense.
I'm trying to remember exactly what it was.
Basically, he plays an up and sort of comer in his company, a young guy.
Jack Lemmon,
who happens to somehow own an apartment, which is quite close to the company in the middle of wherever it is. Maybe it's New York, I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But all his bosses therefore use it as a place to see their mistresses.
Yeah, that's right. I remember.
And he keeps lending them the key and he has to sort of sleep out in park benches and find himself other things to do. And they're all sort of promising him the world if he'll continue doing this. So the gender politics 60 years later.
Oh, yeah. Hilarious.
Are really off. And that I found that hard to kind of watch. You know. And so Shirley MacLaine is this very attractive elevator operator whom all of the dudes are trying to bang. Including Jack Lemmon. And so you can see my problem. It's an icky film.
Okay. Look, no doubt. I agree with you. It's icky. I'm just remembering it now. Because I remember Shirley, what's her name?
MacLaine,
when she was young. Gorgeous. Yes. I thought she was gorgeous.
Very, very attractive. And pixie-haired sort of woman.
Yeah, pixie-haired. And Jack Lemmon does a lot of these pseudo-fuck movies. There's a movie called The Yum Yum Tree with Jack Lemmon. It's all about sex as well. Wow. Like, for that time, you know, he does a lot of these movies. For some reason, I adore Jack Lemmon.
Jack Lemmon's is your every man?
He's your every man, but he's so relatable with his little funny voice and he talks, you know, like,
He does have a presence. I will acknowledge that. Then the film takes a really dark turn without getting too far into spoilers.
Like, I fucking do it. It's like 1,000 years old.
Yeah, it is 60 years old. If you haven't seen the fucking apartment, you don't give enough of a shit, clearly. She tries to kill herself at a particular juncture.
Holy shit.
In his house.
How
and
is so that
he
handled?
Finds her, and this is how they sort of form a closer attachment. And the film ends with basically him quitting the job.
Oh.
And with them, the promise of maybe something between the two of them. But it's just like, really? I sat through 2 hours for that.
Yeah, I mean,
I just don't understand the love for it. It's again expectations, and I must admit, in all these films, because they're in the IMDb top 250, my expectations were high, and I'm sure that's hurt some of them.
How was the suicide attempt handled? Was it like dramatically? Was it
yeah? This is meant to be a comedy. I'm like the whole time, are the laughs? Hello,
is she like sort of is it not? It's not played serious. Like
yeah,
it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Weird film. Yeah, weird film. Yeah. Don't understand.
They can make anything back then.
I know Joe Ketchum from the quote unquote Guilty podcast and Word Salad Productions. He's a big proponent of Billy Wilder, loves this movie. Joe. And everyone like Joe. I just don't understand.
Okay. All right. Cool. My number 7 is, I don't know why, but I started apparently I've watched a lot of documentaries. This is a documentary called.
This is weird.
Yeah. Weapon of Choice. Now. It's about
Glocks. Fat Boy Slim.
No, good call. But it's about Glocks, right? The Glock gun. Now, here's a weird thing to talk about. In Australia, we don't have a lot of guns.
Correct.
And I know guns are essentially a danger and they should be less guns in the world. Absolutely. However, I have to admit here to you today that purely from an aesthetic point of view, I actually think guns look cool.
Like, what? No.
Yeah, they look cool. I don't want to shoot them and I don't want to shoot anyone, but the actual way that they operate and stuff artistically actually looks good to me. Yeah. I mean, whenever I doodle and stuff, I'm always drawing different types of guns because of, like, I don't know, when you were kids, you liked the pulse rifle. They look cool and then all sort of shit, right?
Pulse rifle. Best movie weapon of all time.
So I've heard, maybe. But, you know, the way they're designed and the lines of how they worked, and they actually intrigue me from a artistic point of view. However, this movie is about, the Glock pistol, where filmmakers talk to salespeople and owners about the history and the rise in popularity of this Austrian gun and how it's become actually a brand among rappers and people who want to shoot shit. And it goes to the factory workers who actually made the gun and stuff like that and shows how it was all created by this billionaire, this mysterious billionaire who doesn't give interviews or anything like that. And it's just kind of a weird... I actually didn't mind this one here, but it's
all right, so we're borderline crossing over.
We're borderline crossing. I still don't. If you have no interest in like aesthetically of guns,
not really for me.
Don't look at it. Okay. But it could have been better if the docker was more professionally shot. Some of it feels amateurish, so I'm still not recommending this one. But I still found it interesting enough.
Okay. All right. My number 7 is also about where I'm wavering on whether to recommend or not.
Okay.
And when you hear what it is, most people would say, "Well, of course it's a recommend, Paul. You dickhead." Mm-hmm. But for me, it was extraordinarily long and completely unnecessarily drawn out.
Sounds like a cock.
It's from the epic director David Lean. I'm talking about Lawrence of Arabia from 1962.
Oh, I've seen this too. No prisoners! No, whatever he does. That. Yeah.
So, you know, power corrupts and how long colonialism. 217 minutes. 3 hours and 37 minutes.
That's so long. What is it that you... Go on, keep going.
It's fine.
Is it about Lawrence of Arabia?
Well, it's about whatever his name is, T.E. Lawrence, and yes. He's an officer over there in that particular part of the world, and I guess the British are trying to colonize and fight against the Ottoman Empire, is that right?
That's right, as I recall.
And he's renowned for having gotten very involved and playing a key role and all that kind of stuff, but it kind of doesn't give you any of his background. He's just an officer who's there.
What year was this made, you reckon?
1962.
62, yeah.
And so he's insubordinate. He's an ass clown, really. Yeah. Like, I can't understand how he wasn't court-martialed and you know, whipped and
I remember at having, that stage. Now that I'm remembering it when you're talking about it, I remember thinking this movie is just draggy.
Yeah.
It's just draggy.
It's Peter O'Toole.
Yep,
probably Peter O'Toole. His most iconic and famous role. And it has a couple of amazing sequences. And I'm like, oh, okay, I see it now. There's a wonderful shot where the Arabs he's leading this huge. They run into this base or whatever it is with all their horses, and there's this, from the top of a mountain. It just sort of pans around. It's beautiful.
It was epically made, as I recall.
Yes, and that's its claim to fame.
It would have to be one of the first ones, right?
But for 3 hours and 37 minutes, it's too long. B, I never really felt like I got an insight into his character. He doesn't like guns because I like it too much. If I shoot someone, I'm like, okay, well, where's that come
doesn't
from?
Doesn't really make sense.
Where's it come from?
Yeah, not interesting enough.
I would have been much more interested in his childhood and his young adulthood growing up with like a little bit like Hacksaw Ridge, where we see why he doesn't ever want to fire a gun.
Mm. Yeah, fair enough.
So it lacks that context. And again, yet it's such a celebrated film. And it also makes the choice of showing him dying at the start of the film in the motorbike accident that claimed his life.
I remember.
Yes. Which is a bit weird as well. I mean, I understand it, and a lot of these biographical films will do this, these biopics, but for me,
old shows are like that, like because they were so like, look, we spent all this money, it can be 3 hours long, and then it just doesn't hold up now, so I get it.
Yeah, that's why it's I only gave it 2.5 stars. I can see why people like it, unlike the films before it, where I'm like, what the fuck?
Hmm.
So at least now I get it.
Fair enough. Yeah. Okay, my number 6 is going to make Paul vomit.
Mm.
Because I've always wondered about this show, and when it came out, it was a critical sort of darling, but you'd never watch it unless you're me. The movie is Never Say Never, Justin Bieber. It's a Justin Bieber documentary. That's right, buddy. That's right. That's the documentary on Justin Bieber. Because
stop watching documentaries about stupid shit.
This is the last documentary on my list, almost. So,
this sort of thing ain't my bag, baby.
Well, let me just say to you that I never liked Justin Bieber, and his last album was really good. That Sorry song is a really perfect pop song. I'm sorry, but it is. So I checked this one out.
What? No.
It is actually pretty good.
I don't even know it, so I don't know why I think that.
Well, it turns out
other than general protests against Justin Bieber.
Yeah, I understand that that's the gut trigger. Like, you want to do that. But in terms of how a documentary is made, this is extremely well made. It turns out Little Cracker actually has talent and can play a bunch of instruments. We didn't know that. And it's surprisingly affecting in places. Like, it kind of reveals a young man who's willing to work hard, at least. And he does actually seem to stay grateful for the successes. I'm sure things changed after this. This was actually filmed a long time ago, so, like, he's older now. So yeah, you know, musical numbers, and they're choreographed well, shot well, and I actually kind of enjoyed the film, but I don't recommend it unless you actually are open-minded about pop music like me. Paul's just been shaking his head this whole time I've been talking.
Yeah, all right.
At least, what do you want?
At least you're acknowledging that.
No, no, I'm fine with it.
It's not for everyone.
You can all know about my horrible supposed taste in music.
Supposed. Correct. You absolutely horrendous taste in music. All right, my number six is the oldest film on the list and the oldest film we've ever spoken about on the podcast, full stop.
What?
It is directed by Clyde Bruckman, and Buster Keaton. It is The General from 1926.
Wow.
This film is good. I've now crossed the line.
Tell me about it.
Officially recommending this.
Buster Keaton, is it silent?
It's a silent film.
Yeah.
Yeah. And basically, it's 79 minutes long, which was pretty lengthy
in
those particular days, especially for what is ostensibly an action film, which you may even go so far as to say, a bit of an inspiration for Mad Max Fury Road.
Why? What happened? What's it about?
It's basically set during the American Civil War.
Okay.
And he's a soldier of the South, the Confederacy, right? And those dastardly Union soldiers. Hard. It's hard. The whole time, because our narrative is all shaped by the fact that the North, the Union, right, were fighting on the side of right.
Yeah.
And yet this is a film.
Oh, this would make them bad?
Well, yeah, they're the bad guys.
Yeah, okay.
And these are the Southerners who are fighting.
Righteous.
Yeah, and of course, they were just people fighting. The ideologies were whatever, but you lived where you lived, so you had to fight on that side.
Yeah, 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 totally.
So in it, the film, he's a train driver, right? Or whatever the technical term is, but...
Engineer.
Yeah, he wants to sign up for the war, can't, is refused on the basis of, because he's an engineer, they're like, no, you're more valuable being an engineer, continuing to drive the trains for us.
Is it the title cards that come up with what they're saying?
Yeah,
is it that?
Yeah.
Wow!
Titular, whatever it's called.
How is
that? And so his girlfriend dumps him. Because she thinks he's a coward because he's not been chosen to fight in the war.
This is all conveyed like that?
Yeah. Oh. And then, meanwhile, the dastardly Union soldiers sneak in, steal his train, which is called the General.
Right.
And, happens to be kidnap his girlfriend as well. So he jumps on another train and chases them. So it becomes his chase film, him trying to get his train and his girlfriend back.
Wow.
And he follows them all this way, and it's really entertaining, really well put together. And then eventually gets his girlfriend, and then the Union soldiers realize what's happened, and he gets back on his train, and they chase him back the other way.
Wow. It is very Mad Max-y. Yeah, right?
And it features some incredible stunts, some amazing camera work from 1926.
Are you kidding me? Yeah, so when you're talking like this, I am imagining the piano sort of bling, 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 bling,
little bit
in the back. Is it that?
Yeah, a little bit.
And is it played for laughs?
It's meant to be a comedy. It's probably where it falls down. It's not that funny, but it's a really good action film.
Wow, and how is it watching like a silent film with the cards?
I watch a lot of silent films through the IMDb Top 250, and this is the best.
Really?
The best of them.
The General.
If I had a choice between Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin, Keaton every time.
Okay, fair enough. I think that the idea of naming this movie The General after the train, not the lead character back then, is quite progressive. That's kind of cool. You do that now.
And features one of the most, I think it was at the time, the most expensive stunt in the history of cinema.
What? What happens?
There's a train crash.
Oh, okay.
Put it that way.
Yep. Very cool.
It looks magnificent. For its time. For a film that's almost 100 years old.
You've piqued my interest.
Yeah, absolutely. Check it out. If you at all are interested, check this one out. Suffer through the first 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's hard. Okay. Cool. My number five is actually a movie.
Holy shit.
It's an Ethan Hawke movie, and it's called Stockholm.
Ah, also, I have heard of it. Got it. Haven't watched it yet.
Okay, so it's basically, back in the 70s, the term Stockholm Syndrome, which is where, you know, a hostage finds a bond with her captors kind of thing, was actually coined as a result of this incident, and this is a true life story. Ethan Hawke is Lars Nystrom, who breaks into a bank, fires a gun, gets most of the people out, and has about three or four hostages, and he ends up, like, he wants to break out Mark Strong, which turns out to be this other really famous bank robber, and they know each other. They get down there, and he's got these two female hostages, and one of them is Noomi Rapace.
Yep.
And she sort of falls in love with him. So it's actually
Stockholm Syndrome.
And Stockholm Syndrome. Now, it's billed as being the absurd but true story of the 1973 crime, and if this is any way accurate, and apparently it is quite accurate, this dude was insane. Like, he comes in, and he's obviously the kind of bank robber who doesn't want to actually kill anyone. And he's just trying to get stuff done, but he's kind of nuts. And he's wearing like a long wig and a cowboy hat and glasses. And he's just kind of freaky. Now, the way it's shot is like drowsy and it's a muted in color thing because it's the 70s or whatever. But and there's flashes of violence as well, but it plays like a comedy. So it's actually kind of a good show. It's a little bit, it's not just a romp, really. It's actually quite funny, but I don't think it's particularly blows anything off the hinges. Like, it's a little on the nose in if it's in explaining like the psychological mechanism at the center of the movie. It's not, you would probably have a problem with it. So
I guess I'll find out.
Yeah, but it's, you know, a bit of a jaunty soundtrack. It's okay, but I think it's just okay. But it was an interesting try.
Recommend? Are we there?
No.
Oh,
I don't recommend.
Still not recommend. Okay. Well, I certainly do recommend my number five. Yes, that's where we are, number five. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I recommend the general. Slightly better than general overall is what is now my favorite Wes Anderson film, The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, what? You liked it?
Yeah, I've never seen it before.
I can't believe you liked it. I love it.
Yes, I can see. And it's weird that you would love it, given you are a man who hates quirky, apparently.
I hate the word quirky, but if it's something that's successfully, you know...
Because this film, if you want to give it one word description, quirky.
But every Wes Anderson film's like that.
Yeah, and I don't like it normally.
I understand. What's cool about this is that, do you notice the light? When these characters are talking, all of a sudden the stage light will go whoom, like this and change completely. It's like, oh, it's just kind
of
cool.
There's lots of little touches, lots of directorial flourishes,
tons. Lots
of beautiful transitions. Like even the sort of models he uses to depict the hotel.
The models are really, I think they're really cool to look at.
Yeah, it's really gorgeous production design and the like.
Agreed.
Some intriguing performances. None better than, of course, than Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph Fiennes the shit.
Is excellent in it. My big problem with the film is its unnecessary framing device.
Oh, it's all right. Well, the storytelling.
So it's, let me see if I get this straight from memory. It is Tom Wilkinson
present. Yep.
Recalling back when he was Jude Law.
Right.
Talking to F. Murray Abraham,
mm-hmm.
who is this weird guy who always orders the smallest room in the hotel, yet is the owner of the hotel.
Yep.
Telling his story to Jude Law about how he came to own the hotel. Needless.
I believe that is all to provide like a few levels of space between the audience.
Why?
Because of Quirk. I'm sure.
It's dumb.
I'm sure.
I didn't like it.
Yeah.
It really annoyed me. The first 10 minutes, I was like, this film is garbage. There's another Wes Anderson misfire.
Initially.
And then it got down to like, okay, so Ralph Fiennes is sleeping with all these elderly spinsters.
Yep.
And one of them dies and he goes to claim the inheritance that she's left him and takes this new busboy / porter, whatever he is, with him, who is, of course, F. Murray Abraham, grown up years later. So it's set back in the, whatever, 1930s, somewhere around there.
A long time ago, yeah.
And it's just really entertaining.
You know,
from that point, I don't want to give away film, so I don't want to spoil.
But it's cool in that, because even for all its jaunt and that sort of thing, Ralph Fiennes...
Well, there's death and there's
some
violence.
But there's also unexpected, like Ralph Fiennes starts to tell a story and he's like, well, that was because... Oh, fuck it. Yes. It's just like that. I'm like, it's just kind of cool. It's definitely a fun movie.
Willem Dafoe's got some menace.
Yes, that's right.
In this film, Jeff Goldblum's good fun and his little lawyer role.
As always.
It's such a great cast. You know, the Harvey Keitel, Adrian Brody.
That's why people like
Bill
this
Murray,
shit.
Edward Norton, Cersei Ronan is the love interest, Jason Schwartzman.
Yep.
I mean, Tilda Swinton, of course.
That's why I think that people love this movie. It's a flight of fancy that works.
Yes, that's a good description.
You know what I mean? Because a lot of his movies are like that. Yeah.
Good film. Check it out if you're at all interested in Wes Anderson stuff.
All right. My number four is a movie called Captive State.
Oh, I want to see this one. Have you seen it already?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, because I'm new.
Yeah.
I shouldn't ask how, because that will incriminate you. I didn't know this was out yet.
Well, I was also, I'll be honest with you, I had no idea what this movie was. I'd never heard of it before. Paul's definitely more up on this shit than me, but I looked at it and looked at the cards, looked at the synopsis, looked at the trailer, and went, oh, that's a bit cool. This movie is set in Chicago 10 years after Chicago has been invaded by aliens. So the entire world in this movie has been colonized by aliens.
So it sounds a lot like the TV show Colony with Sawyer from Lost.
Oh, really? It could be. I've not seen it, but the entire world is colonized by the aliens, and they've essentially got all of humanity under their thumb, even to the point where humans are, like, they revere the alien overlords. And it stars, like, John Goodman, Vera Farmiga, and some other folks, and basically it's about the small resistance force of humans who are trying to overthrow the alien overlords, who they call the aliens legislators. And what's kind of interesting about the film is that the movie's less interested in futuristic spectacle and more in the human drama of what happens after the bad guys win, which you don't often see on a screen. So it barely shows the aliens themselves. And the interesting thing is that these aliens, they rule not through the, you know, gee whiz kind of space age power of laser beams and shit, but via the traditional coercion of government officials. So they use humans to control other humans. And in a very same way.
Yep,
so
yep.
For a good half hour, you're not sure what the fuck is going on in this film. It's one of those.
Yeah, and you're not going to spoil anything more.
No,
that,
I'm not. So. And I'll just say it's a little. That can be a little tedious. So it's not particularly that doesn't work as well. But I think it's really kind of cool. It's like it was a really good film, and it was extremely well made. And it looked, I didn't check the budget, but it looked pretty good. It looked quite, yeah, a bit of an expensive film.
Undated for an Australian cinematic release, but it came out, I think, 2-3 months ago in the States. So
Yeah. So worthwhile if you like sci-fi and the alien invasion type shit.
Okay, very nice. And I recommend.
Definitely recommend.
Okay, cool. My number four is a sports film.
A sports film!
India. It's what? The one Bollywood film I've thus far seen.
Go on.
And genuinely enjoyed.
What? Okay,
it's called Dungle.
And okay.
It's the extraordinary true story based on the life of, his name's Mahivar Singh and his two daughters, Greta and Babita.
Okay.
Forget. Anyway, they're both wrestlers.
The girls.
Yes. So Mahivar was a wrestler himself, never quite got to the pinnacle of where he wanted to, and then he had two girls rather than boys. And all he wanted to do was have a boy and train him to be better than he was.
Mm.
And in India in particular, which I don't think we're going to offend anybody here when I say this, is a little bit more backwards than the rest of a lot of the world,
yeah,
I should
say. Yeah, it's an uncivilized. Well, I mean, it's like a
in
third
terms
world.
Of
yeah.
its gender sort of discrepancies.
Of course.
And this is going back a little bit of time as well, 20, sure. 25 years ago. He decides to train his daughters to be wrestlers regardless, and he puts them up against boys.
Okay.
And it's, of course, he runs into opposition and how he gets around that, and they get to the point where he gets both the girls onto the Indian Olympic team.
What?
And then they compete for Olympic gold.
Did you say this is a real story?
Yeah, true story.
That actually happened?
Yep.
Wow.
And it's great. Now, it's got all the Bollywood trappings,
so
right?
So is it all the like the acts and the numbers and the stuff and the dancing
well,
and the shit?
Well, it's the most grounded of all the Bollywood films I've seen, which is probably why I like it the most. And it's a sports film, sports drama.
Sure.
Right? So the interaction between dad and the girls is very, very good. And the dad, I did not realize this was played by Aamin Khan, who, if you're at all interested and familiar with Bollywood film, he's in every big Bollywood film made in the last like 15 years.
Is it?
And he is unrecognizable. He put on like fucking 15 or 20 kilos for this role to play a wrestler.
That's pretty standard. That's pretty like impressive.
And he's a guy who looks much younger than he actually is.
Hmm.
So he's got a bit of a George Clooney kind of, he can be play old or play younger.
Yeah, sure.
Perfectly cast. He's wonderful in the movie. His daughters are both excellent as well because they start to, the older daughter in particular starts to go against dad because she's like, I want to live my fucking life.
Yeah.
So it's got all that drama, and then she gets into the team, and the coach on the team is portrayed as being a bit oafish and idiotic, and he's telling her to forget all the stuff the dad said, but of course it's the stuff the dad said that's going to get her to win the medal and all this kind of stuff. And it goes a bit cartoonish at the end, like without spoiling it, kind of what the coach is doing to the dad. It's ridiculous, and there's no way that happened in real life, but they try to create some dramatic tension.
Is it subtitles?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, it's that sort of Hinglese or Hindi, they bounce it out of
the occasional English. Yeah.
And even words in a sentence will be English, so it's quite interesting to listen to from that perspective as well.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yes, there is a wedding and there's a dance they do, but it's not like all the characters break out in song all of a sudden.
Yeah, because that's actually my issue with Bollywood
which
stuff.
Which really is hard to watch. But the other thing is, it's what I've worked out is all these Bollywood songs, when they put them on, is literally just showing what's happening on screen. So in a Western production, there'll be a training montage with something suitably like inspirational, like think of Creed 2 with that.
Need a montage.
Yeah, that kind of thing. All the creatures are.
Yep, totally.
Like you're running, like a little bit. But this is like, oh, dad, don't train me so hard. No, dad, don't train me so hard.
So that's a little bit like Broadway-ish.
Yeah, with the inflection I'm putting on it. But it's, and dungle. I quite enjoyed the music.
I'm actually surprised you liked this.
Like, I dug it a lot. This is just outside my top 10 of the 320 films I've seen.
What?
This year.
Well, okay, someone's branching out.
Yep.
All right, nice. My number three is the movie Synecdoche, New York.
I haven't seen it. Interested.
Dude, let me tell you about this movie, okay? I actually only watched it because the title itself intrigued me, and I always wondered what the hell this movie is actually about. Turns out it is about this theater director, Caden Cotard, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman. His wife and daughter have left him, his therapist is more interested in plugging her new book than helping him with his problems, and a strange disease seems to be causing his body to shut down. He's basically a hypochondriac.
Okay.
He leaves his home in Schenectady, New York, which is in fact a place.
Yeah.
And I think the reason the title is Synecdoche,
it's misspelled.
It's misspelled. It's a mutation of that word, is kind of a clue as to the movie. Because what happens is He wins this genius grant thing. He leaves his home, heads to New York City, where he literally purchases a rundown city block, constructs apartment buildings on them, and fills them with actors who will improvise entire created lives of unflinching reality and pain 24/7. He's building a theater company. Yeah, that's what it is, right? And this goes on for years and decades, man. That's what this movie's about. This is
true story?
No, it's a Charlie Kaufman movie.
Oh. All
right? So what it is that it's surreal in that if you've seen like Being John Malkovich,
yeah.
It's that, but it's not quite as obtuse as that. It's just, it's got a weird surreal element to it, which if you like that sort of thing, plays quite well. You have to let it into your life a bit when you look at it.
Okay.
But it's sort of, I think the point of the movie is it's an allegory of all the world's a stage and we're merely actors upon it. It's sort of that. And then it's done in such a weird, nice way that the execution of it gives you an interesting watch. At the end of it all, you'll feel as if you've lived through some tragedy, swam a chlorinated tears, fucking, it's not for everyone, but it's utterly extraordinary in the way that it comes out. So okay. I think I actually liked it. Right. I liked it. Although I don't know how I could tell you, go watch this. Just give it a try.
Sounds very strange.
Keep your mind open.
Yeah, but it's Charlie Kaufman, so what do you expect?
Exactly. You need to know that.
Okay, cool. My then number three is from the master himself, from Alfred Hitchcock. It's arguably my new favorite Hitchcock film.
Which one?
It's Vertigo.
Oh, Vertigo. I thought you were going to say Rope.
From 1958, I haven't seen Rope yet. Not the only top 250, so I haven't been as moved to watch it. But this is Jimmy Stewart playing a detective who has there's a traumatic incident at the start of the movie, which gives him a fear of heights.
Right.
So acrophobia, whatever it's called.
Agoraphobia, yep.
Agoraphobia is fear of open places.
Right. Sorry.
I should know
that. I'm talking to the drink. What am I saying?
He becomes asked by an old friend he used to go to school with, but he hasn't seen much of in the years, to sort of follow his wife, who's just displaying, I should say, some very strange behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to be almost like she's possessed. So there's a supernatural element something or other.
Yeah.
Have you seen this movie?
No.
Okay, so I won't spoil it, but in effect, he starts following her, but she's beautiful. It's played by Kim Novak, and mm-hmm. he falls in love with her as he's following her around and saves her a couple of times from committing suicide.
Oh.
And it's really odd, strange stuff that happens. Then the film takes this huge twist, as it does with Hitchcock. But I guess the supernatural element kind of held me in.
It's
120.
I didn't know there was a supernatural element.
8 minutes to it.
Hmm.
And the twist comes about halfway sort of through the film. And it completely changes tack from there. I don't want to spoil any more than that, even though it is 60.
No, it's fine, because this is a classic that a lot of people don't get to until later on, like you.
Yeah, I loved it a lot. I thought it was really entertaining. It does, like a lot of these old films, something I want to point out, which really shocks me, is they just end. Like, something big happens, and...
Really?
Like, there's no denouement, there's no time to sort of process it. It's just like, we're all done.
This is Hitchcock, man. Yeah, I guess, I mean, I know what you mean, like, that is the fact that it's, I know it's black and white and all that sort of thing.
No, this one, I saw it in colour, so whether it was converted to Technicolor or whatever it was, but this one, I think was filmed in colour.
Oh, maybe it was filmed in colour, okay, that's cool. Wow. And do you enjoy his directing style, or is it like...
Some of his films, like, I thought Rear Window was wildly overrated.
Okay.
It was really boring and really, really slow, whereas this one probably is not that much different in pace, but I guess that supernatural element, that mystery really held me in. Whereas Rear Window, the whole time waiting for something to fucking happen.
It interests me that there was a supernatural element to, you know, okay, cool. Very nice. My number two and one are both recommendations from Paul.
Oh,
yes. That's right. So feel good about that in your life. There you go.
Oh, that's my win for the weekend.
Well, sure.
Mocking me, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I am mocking a shit soundboard, though. my number two is Annihilation. Which I'm not sure if was... You and I just talked about it. I'm not sure if you accidentally...
No, I recommend it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it just missed my top 10 of last year.
All right, so this is a...
Honorable mention.
Yeah, totally. This is a Natalie Portman movie, and long story short, it got to Netflix as a release, but it was actually clearly a big budget film.
Yeah, from memory, it came out in the States in the theaters mm-hmm. and everywhere else around the world on Netflix. So they decided not to release it internationally.
The reason being...
cinema.
Yeah, that they...
Because they thought it was too obtuse, too complicated, that the audience... It wouldn't make money.
Oh, I agree. I'm not sure. See, the thing is that this movie was... The reason that they sold it to Netflix was that if you do that for a slower price, the movie goes into profit immediately. And it's very good for the studio.
They pay out a huge amount to the film. Yep.
So they said, well, rather than risking it, let's do this. And I would have to say that was probably a good call. I thought this movie was going to be like Arrival or something for some reason. Because it was
so much better than Arrival.
Dude, it's like... It's initially great, then it gets freaky, then it gets gory, then it gets freaky again. It's kind of a sci-fi horror. No wonder fucking Paul liked it, okay? Now, this is...
Correct.
It's about Natalie Portman, who's this biologist who has a boyfriend, Oscar Isaac, who's this soldier who goes away on a, like, mission. And then he kind of... She thinks he's dead. She doesn't hear anything from the people who sent him there. Then one day he just turns up in her house and he's kind of weird. He freaks out. And it turns out this guy actually went to this alien, like, landing site, which winds up being this thing they call the Shimmer, and everything inside it seems to mutate, like, all the life on Earth. It's just this little area, and it's slowly expanding. So she goes in with these five other chicks that they send in there, and they all have guns, which is kind of cool. I didn't expect all these five scientist chicks to have guns, and weird stuff ensues. Now, I'll tell you something. When this movie ended, I had no fucking idea what it was about. And I'm quite happy to tell you, okay. I didn't. I mean, I was sitting there going, okay, I can sort of see what themes are going on here. But I genuinely like, what the hell did I just watch? So I turned to the internet.
As one does.
And it, basically, the theme of the film is essentially self-destruction and how humans are flawed in being self-destructive down to our very cells. There's a lot of symbolism all over the place. And it's, I think what I probably liked about it was it is extremely deep. And the producer even said, I don't know if Alex Garland's film was a little bit too intelligent for most people. It was certainly too intelligent for me. But having said that, it's really high budge. Like, because it was obviously quite a well, you know, put together movie, an expensive movie, I'm watching it on TV and I'm like, oh, well, this is kind of cool.
I think it looks amazing. I think the sound design is excellent. This film, I think the score is phenomenal. Alex Garland, following up from Ex Machina, which most people really loved as well. And, of course, is the writer of 28 Days Later, Dread, and even The Beach.
He's
got a pretty good pedigree, although people will argue The Beach's merits.
I like The Beach. I like The Beach. But I know what you mean. Wasn't that Danny Boyle?
He directed it, but Alex Garland wrote it.
Oh, wrote it. Yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, the story is definitely involved as hell. And the thing is, it doesn't give you anything. That's probably why I did like it. That's why it's number two. Even after all the shit, I was still watching all the way through. And it's not a short film. Like, it's two and change.
Yeah, a little bit, but it's not overly long either. No, I think it earned its length.
Well, that's why
I've been talking about.
Exactly. That's why I liked it. This is a quality film which looks beautiful. I think it looks really, really nice. And the fact that I was asking questions afterwards and had to look it up and stuff, sometimes I mind that. This time I did not. I think it was a good enough, high quality enough film to earn my interest.
Yeah, and I also think you can, well, at least I did, and I was on the Super Movie Bros with Dave and Jay.
Yeah.
And we talked about this film extensively on their show, so about 15, 16 months ago now. So go back and check that out if you're at all interested. But I think it gave you enough in the runtime that you had some suspicions, like, without spoiling it.
Yes, absolutely.
So as opposed to being like, what the fuck?
Which is what I initially said.
Mother.
Yeah.
Mother!
That was just fuck this film.
Yeah, so I'm glad you liked it. It's a great film.
But if you're looking for a thinker, that's this one right here. But it does keep you interested the whole time.
Yep. All right, nice. Speaking of a film that keeps you interested the whole time, it's some dark, dark shit.
Oh, really?
It's a Danish film from director Thomas Vinterberg.
Yeah, that makes sense.
From 2012, stars Mads Mikkelsen. It's The Hunt.
Oh, is it dark, dark shit? I know of this film.
Yeah, so it's basically this nice guy. He's a teacher. He's had a messy split from his wife. Uh-huh. His teenage son lives with his ex-wife, and he works in a pre-primary, basically.
Oh.
Kindergarten. And his best mate's daughter is 5 years old, somewhere in that realm. Best mate and his wife have a lot of problems, and the daughter starts to focus on him in an inappropriate way.
Oh, really?
Not in a sexual way, because she doesn't understand, but in a way which is suddenly cast doubt on whether or not he has done something to her. And he's done nothing. He's a lovely guy.
Right? Oh.
And the film makes no... This is not a did he or didn't he do it. This is a he did not do it.
He did not do it, but something...
But
yeah.
Suddenly, because her accusation is taken seriously by the head of the childcare / preschool / kindergarten, and word gets out, he starts being treated by like a pariah. And it's this awful film
where
you are so on board with this guy because he's such a... All he wants is his son back in his life and a fair chance. And his best mate now thinks he's diddled his daughter.
That sounds tough.
Oh, it's so emotional a film.
The Hunt. I don't know if
I thoroughly recommend it. If you're up on for a really well-acted, well-produced drama of such serious and bleakness, go for it. If you're not, steer well clear, because this is this film hurts.
Really? Tugs at your heart? Oh, yeah, tears your heart out a little?
Perfectly.
Really?
Yeah, I won't say any more than that.
All right. Wow, that's good. Some of y'all out there, I know you like this shit. I know you'll be digging that one. All right. My number one is a yes, of course, Paul's recommendation. Woo! It's a doco again, but it's one that I really recommend. It's called a
doco again?
It is. Free Solo.
Yes!
Free Solo is the best movie. Shit, man. Oh, man. Some of the shots of this film. Okay, guys, this is a doco about a dude who climbs without ropes. It's called Free Soloing. And it's
fucking insanity.
It is absolute insanity, because there's this one particular wall. And I can't remember how high it is, but it's in Yellowstone National Park or whatever. And it's this...
Yosemite, right?
Yosemite, sorry, Yosemite, yes. And his whole thing is, this guy is like, well, no one's ever free soloed up that thing before. I would like to be the first one to do it. Now,
his name's Alex. I can't remember his last name.
Yeah, Alex. So but he's... Yeah.
And he is clearly on the spectrum.
Dude, is he ever... And that's why this movie is so good, all right?
Because it's not just a climbing film.
It is not just a climbing... It's about this guy, and he's actually hired his own film crew and his friend. And the production here is fucking outstanding.
This is one of the most beautiful films you'll ever see.
Beautiful. I saw this on my 27-inch monitor here in the man cave.
You dickhead.
I got vertigo from that. And I don't even know, it's the type of, I was actually uncomfortable watching, and I felt like in my bones, you're afraid of someone falling. That, I was like, ugh.
And that's the point I went, this is the best film. This is, I'll say it right now, this is the best documentary I've ever seen.
Ooh.
Ever. Full stop. And I'll tell you why. Because I've never felt so much watching a film like this.
And masterfully put together.
I guess. I didn't read up about him afterwards. I didn't go and check whether or not he survived and whatever else. So I hoped/thought he would. But I wasn't sure. And it was enough for me when he was getting ready to go.
Oh.
I'm getting built up.
Well, they
And then when he does go for it, I'm like, holy fucking shit. And
yeah.
I'm like, if I'm feeling so on edge, no pun intended,
yeah,
about this film, it must be
brilliant.
You're
with him when he's climbing. And then the thing is, it shows you him doing the climb with ropes, which a lot of people have done. But he falls off. And you see him fall and get saved by the rope. And you're like, fuck, that could happen anytime. And the thing he's doing to go up and down that rock, the path, is so perilous. Like, some of it he's hanging on by his fingers, off the edge of nothing, and it's just amazing. But I think the thing that, like you said, that is really good about it is who he is. I'm already slightly crushing on the guy immediately, because he seems to have had no problem leaving and just doing whatever he wants in his life. He lived off some insurance money after his father's death when he was 19, and he had just enough money to quit school and dirtbag around the U.S. and eating 88-cent dinners and parked in Walmart parking lots and shit like that. It's very romantic for me to know that people can do that. I could never do
and
that.
And succeed, yeah.
Absolutely. And he became successful doing that. So it does come to light that he's had a really neglected childhood. And no one in his family ever told him they loved him, which means it's a problem for him and his girlfriend now.
Yeah, which is great. They have this human element. The girlfriend comes in.
Yes. Well, this is the best thing. I don't know if it's the best thing about it, but here's it. The girlfriend couldn't be lovelier. She's a lovely, pretty young thing. And it's one of his first girlfriends or whatever. Oh, not his first girlfriends, but serious. And she supports his life, all that stuff. But you can tell that this guy is so, into, I gotta conquer this hill or this mountain or whatever, this wall face. You can tell the woman being there is kind of fucking with his game. And it's a weird thing, because you're like, she just wants to love you. And she's being what a woman, she's just being a girlfriend, right?
Wait a second. She's not just being a girlfriend fucking with his shit.
No.
She's being a person worrying about him.
Exactly. Sorry. I didn't mean to say that if your girlfriend cares for you, she's fucking with your game. Absolutely not. She's not a succubus, as they say.
Like Madonna.
People say this all the time. Pete Sampras was the bomb until fucking Bridget Wilson. Honey, turn to shit. Tom Brady, Giselle. It happens a lot, but I'm not saying that's what this is. However, it's interesting to see it from his point of view, where it kind of works out that way.
The best part of the whole film, I'm going to spoil this a little bit.
Go on.
Is when a mate of his, who you never seen the film, he dies. Mm-hmm. He dies somewhere climbing in a mountain in Germany.
Yep. And people die on free soloing all the time, by the way, and they make that very point.
And she, I can't remember his girlfriend's name.
Me either.
Yeah, but she's basically saying, oh my God, his wife and his kids, how are they going to be now? And Alex is sitting there eating food. He's like,
Yeah, yeah. Yep. She's like, do you feel any obligation to try and live so that you can be together with me?
No. The first thing she says, he's like, yeah, okay. And she goes, but don't you get that's a big thing? He goes, well, what does she expect?
Totally.
And she says, you understand, I'm her in our relationship. And he just looks at her through her. And I'm like, how the fuck is this woman hanging around?
And she goes, I tell Alex I love him all the time, and he shows me he loves me all the time. And I'm like, so he hasn't even dropped the L yet. And he mentions it, because he said, no one's ever said it to me. So why do I say it? So he's totally a bit fucked, right? But you'd have to be this guy.
Yeah.
And to
well,
do
they
this
even
thing.
Show him, they do a CT scan and his amygdala doesn't fire.
Yeah.
Like he has no fear response, which is the only way.
Only way you could do this thing. There is no chance any human.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating on a psychological level. It's fascinating on a relationship level. It's fascinating on the pro sport climbing level. It's a fantastic film.
It's just a really, really cool watch. And it's not long or anything. It just, yeah, if you've got a few nerves of steel to test out, it's just great to watch. So Free Solo. Give it a try.
Nice. I'm really, really pleased you enjoyed that one. Yeah. And of course, Alex is. As is that film.
It's probably almost apt on this one.
For a change. My number one then, to wrap up this week's top 10, last 10, the first in, well, 3-4 months or so, I'd say, is a Spanish film, Argentinian film, I think, from director Juan José Campanella from 2009. It's called The Secret in Their Eyes.
Really?
And it
Tell
is
me about it.
A fantastic murder mystery.
Is that so?
Yeah. I don't know any of these actors. Cool. Ricardo Darín, Soledad Villamay, Pablo Rago.
Just keep going.
Who
are these
people?
It's fine. It's
fine. Who are these people? I don't know. I'll tell you what they are. They're all fucking phenomenal actors.
The Secret in Their Eyes.
It basically follows a retired legal counselor who is reflecting back and trying to write a book about the one case he never solved.
Okay.
Right? And he had a younger, hot boss who was like this absolute up-and-comer, this wonderful legal-minded female who was married,
sure,
who he was crushing on severely, right? Even he was working for, she's the boss. And he's trying to solve this murder and rape of this local woman. And effectively never solves it. It flashes back and forth between contemporary times where he goes back to the office because she's younger, she's still working.
Yeah.
And he goes to her and starts to talk about the case again and then back in time about how it all went wrong and how what happened and blah, 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 blah. It's fantastic.
This is your number one.
It becomes this romance as well, kind of sneakily. Like, that's way the second level, but I totally bought the fact that, yeah, I know why he's into her, and I got why she became into him over time.
Yeah, it's a good story.
But it's unrequited. Like, it never works out, at least in the past. And so you got this new sort of contemporary sort of time about, will he now solve it,
and will
they now get together?
And this is a thriller. Cool.
Murder mystery with a phenomenal one shot halfway through the film. One of the best I've ever seen.
The Secret in Their Eyes.
Yeah, which features during a big football match and the main character and his sort of offsider who also works with him chasing a suspect through the stadium during this massive football game involving thousands of extras.
Argentinian film.
Yep.
So it's in Spanish.
Yep.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I'll check that one out. It sounds cool. I don't know
why. Yeah, I don't want to build up too much. I know that Aetion, one of our listeners and big contributors to the Facebook listener community, link in the show notes, he didn't like this one from his Facebook, his Letterboxd score. But I dug the shit out of it, maybe because I had so no expectations at that point. But it's 130 minutes, so it's still long, but it earned its length.
Oh, good one.
All right, that's it. That's our top 10, last 10s. Very different lists, obviously.
Totally different
lists. Wayne doing contemporary, me doing sort of old school. Although that said, it's interesting that my two best films are the most contemporary, 2012, 2009.
But like international films and shit, man, it's all over the place.
Yeah, well, which deliberately
good.
And next time around, we do a top 10 last, and I'll steer away from the IMDb top 250 and get back into more contemporary stuff. But it was nice to be able to do something a little bit different this time around. All right, no need to go back and compare lists because, of course, they are non-comparable. Let's wrap up this episode the way we do every episode, with a little segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 then with the aforementioned Daniel Henderson from the IMDb Journey podcast and the big competition with the Movie Watching Challenge. Is one that he watched, 1 hour photo. We asked for,
Robin
by
Williams.
The way, one sentence reviews of recent films you watched. Chilling performance from Robin Williams in a film that unfortunately falls incredibly flat in the final act. 2.5 stars for Daniel from Jared DeMezza.
Jezza.
Whom we went around his house during the week. The patrons are about to be up for a very special treat. Wayne will be reviewing this film live, The Descent.
The Descent.
The Neil Marshall horror film.
It's a horror film.
2004.
And he made me watch it.
Yep, we watched it. We recorded Wayne's reactions in between bits and pieces. You'll be able to hear that if you're a patron of the show before the end of the week. Jared's review, a film where Wayne pooed himself half as much as I thought he would. He must be coming acclimatized to Paul's tastes.
Yeah, it's a little nasty. No one's happy.
From Geordie Davidson, top-level patron to the show, Edge of Tomorrow. It would be easy for the repeating days to get boring, but this film does a great job developing characters and following its own rules. I'm sorry, I was so late to it. 3.5 stars.
Hell yes.
Gerald Morris, Booksmart, brand new film out in the States, not out here yet in Australia. Starts as a super bad for girls, morphs into something totally unique with glimpses of familiarity from our favourite coming-of-age comedies. Best movie of 2019 so far.
I am watching that next. For real. Ooh. Real. I've got that. I had my eye on that, but just because someone recommended it to me.
Yes, likewise, it's on my radar. Thank you so much for that, Gerald from Two Peas on a Podcast, returning soon to your podcatcher. Paul Murphy, I watched Unfriended after hearing you guys mention it. One sentence it is: suicide victim ghost fucks up online friends in an intense virtual ride. Moral of the story, get out more. Did really enjoy it, though.
You liked it, though, right? Oh, he did.
I liked the second one. I didn't think of the first one for whatever reason. Philip Wilson, Wine Country, really funny SNL ladies make and star in a terrible, unfunny movie as an excuse to hang out in a nice place.
Damn it, I was thinking about watching that one.
There we go. Dan Brennick, Mom and Dad, the most over-the-top Nicolas Cage performance and decent premise ruined by an idiot child. 5 out of 10.
That was a piece of shit, and I believe I gave it 4 out of 100 or something ridiculous. I hated that shit.
Patron-only review. I thought it was quite good, that movie. I enjoyed it, so don't listen to Wayne.
I might have given it 0. Go on.
I fart in your general direction.
The soundboard has it all. Troy Spinner from the Comic Confidential podcast.
T-Spin.
Who, of course, where we are part of their network, ccradio.com.au. Check out the website for all the other great shows there. Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, brilliant, and I cried like a boss.
Really?
So fuck you, Wayne, because I said I cried in that film, and you were like, really? Wow, okay, that's weird.
Well, I didn't see it, so. Look, I cry all the time, but.
Mm-hmm. Mike Margosian, I, Tonya, amazingly done to give sympathy and empathy to a person that got so vilified with such little information at the time. That's
agree.
Tonya Harding versus Nancy Kerrigan.
It's fantastic show.
Thank you for that, Mike. I want you to watch this podcast, Godzilla King of the Monsters, a big budget live action anime in the best way. If you want to hear Wayne and I's review, that's coming out
that one.
This coming weekend on the show. Pete Langelt said on Twitter, Rocket Man would have been better with less music.
Really? I've been hanging out to watch that one. Okay. Shit, better with less music. It's not the best.
Go watch a movie, Brightburn. I wanted it. Now that I have it, I don't know if I still want it.
Ooh.
Kind of like kids. Thank you for that, Kelvin. Shaking Not Nerd, Duty, good friend to the show.
Yes, Duty.
Shazam, superhero film that remembers what a superhero film should be, has action, comedy, and most importantly, heart.
Okay.
He then went on to suggest it was better than Into the Spider-Verse. And
no!
There you go, Duty. Last two from Joy DiCarlo, good friend from the So Wizard podcast. Do check out their show, Aladdin. Well, at least Jasmine is hot.
That's exactly what should be on the poster.
There you go. You get Wayne's endorsement there, Joey. And last but not least, by any stretch of the imagination, from Sam Hurley from the Movie Reviews and 20Qs podcast. Going to be back on the show next month. Excuse my breaking voice with this cold that I have. The Perfection. What in the name of fuckity fuck 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 did I watch?
The Perfection.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. Well worth a look.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well worth a look. I will give one more shout out to a new podcast out of the other side of Australia, Bad Casting Pod on Twitter. Hellboy, best left unseen.
Oh, absolutely. That's a shithole.
There we go. That is it for your feedback this week. Thank you so much to everybody who gets back with their reviews and feedback on the show. Topics, we really, truly do appreciate it. How do the listeners do that, Wayne?
Just by Googling the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews or by hitting us up on email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We are on Twitter at TheCountdownPC and you can hit us up in our Facebook listener community. Link is in the show notes. By the way, Mike Margosian has made a Facebook watching community for a combination of our listeners and the Comic Confidential listeners.
Cool.
So if you're all interested, want to log what you're watching there and have a bit of a chat about with the other listeners, please join up and get involved. That is it for this week's episode 218 of the Countdown Movie TV Reviews. Thank you so much for joining us, Wayne. What's happening for episode 219 of the show?
How should I know? I didn't see this shit coming. Brother got to look at
shit. Use small words that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
Every week, Wayne.
Actually almost apt that
I
one.
Throw
so
to you
well done.
And say, what's happening next week? So I would anticipate that somewhere in the previous hour and 10, 15 minutes.
I don't think about it until it happens, Kraken. I just
he lives his life one second at a time.
Essentially. Next week, we are doing something close to my heart and my genitals. It is our top 10 man crushes in movies.
God,
what up, dog?
How did I agree to this? Caught me in a moment of weakness or
drunkenness.
Yeah,
Paul doesn't like to admit that he likes cock, but I'm happy with it. So,
It's not man cock, it's man
crush. Man crushes. Yes. So if you think the guy's cool or you want to, you know, metaphorically do him, sure.
Spoiler alert, if you don't like Tom Cruise or George Clooney, don't listen to Wayne's List.
Hey, there's no guarantee, motherfucker. Yes, I may have matured in years, much like George Clooney and Tom Cruise.
So therefore, this one becomes a particularly pertinent sound drop.
Holy hell, son, you're about as useful as a cock-flavored lollipop.
I mean, sure, it is useful as any of your shitty songs are.
That's episode 219. This has been episode 218. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been the soundboard.
You already used this shitbag soundboard.
You can't handle
that's
the
shit.
Truth.
That's shit. You're a dick. So suck it while you look for another fucking sound. There it is. Another piece of shit. All of these are shit, fucking.
We will catch you next week.
Yeah.